And in this other room, there's basically a toilet, and they told me to sit on the toilet, lean on the nurse, and push my baby into a toilet.
That's the voice of a girl named Kelly. They don't identify her any more than that on Bill O'Reilly's O'Reilly Factor. He's interviewing her recently on his program. She was one of the victims of George Tiller, who is a late-term abortion doctor in Kansas. Now, O'Reilly's been talking a lot about Tiller, and I think it's a stroke of genius and actually simply the logical extension of his expose on Tiller that's been going for about 2 months now on his program to simply talk to a woman. In this case, she was 14 when she underwent this abortion at Tiller's clinic in Kansas. 14. I think it's simply the logical extension of this expose to say, let's talk to some of Tiller's victims. And they're not done yet. Now, as you just heard, and I warned you twice before, this conversation is of a very graphic nature and disturbing nature. So, especially if you don't want to hear it yourself, especially if you have little children, I do urge you simply not to listen. We're going to play the rest of this interview. She's going to go on to talk about the aftermath of this abortion at the hands of Tiller and the kind of treatment that she got from the doctor himself. Back to Bill O'Reilly's O'Reilly Factor and his interview with Kelly.
And after that, they wheel you into another room to remove all the, you know, afterbirth. And really, that's the only two times I ever saw the doctor was when he injected the saline solution and when he finished the process by removing the afterbirth. This is all very graphic, and I think that that's very important that people know that that's going on in
sure.
our country.
Absolutely. I applaud your courage. Now, did the doctor say anything to you?
No. I mean, you know, it's... What I remember today is that no one ever said anything to me about what was going to happen during that five-day process or what was going to happen when I left that clinic or 10 years down the road what was going to happen.
All right, but Tiller himself, when he injected the fetus with the killing agent and then when he took the afterbirth, he never said anything to you at all?
This will all be over soon.
This will all be over soon. What happened to the body?
I have no idea. I left my baby dead in a toilet.
All right, then when you got out from there, after the process was over, you went where?
After he had finished the
abortion.
Process that
right.
day?
Right.
To a hotel room and then back home.
So you just left the clinic right after you discharged the baby, the dead baby, and then they put your coat on and you went out to a hotel?
Yes.
How do you feel about that, the whole thing?
I'm disgusted. I'm disgusted that women are told that they have a choice, yet no one tells us what that choice is or what that choice is going to do to us or to the baby, for that matter. I mean, very few people, I think, know that this is what happens. It's not just an easy solution. It's not an answer to any problem. It just creates other problems.
What happened to you after the abortion?
Many things. I mean, I was traumatized, so I had lots of symptoms of post-traumatic stress disorder. I had very low self-esteem. I was promiscuous. I used drugs. I had eating disorders. Lots of horrible things. And when I think that, you know, what would the worst case scenario be, that I have my child, that would have been better than having gone through all of the effects of
right.
the depression, suicidal thoughts, all of that happened afterwards.
Now, Kelly, you don't beat yourself up. You were 13 years old, 14 when the abortion happened. You know, you know better now. You're courageous. You came on. You told the nation what's happening in Kansas. Very few people will do that. And, you know, we really appreciate your courage very much. Thank you.
It's Audio Open Lines Issues, Etc. That was Bill O'Reilly interviewing a young lady named Kelly. She was one of the many, and we're talking about George Tiller's operation as a major nationwide operation out of Kansas, where he will do an abortion, as Bill O'Reilly says, any time from beginning to end, from conception to birth. And guess what? What he does in Kansas, two young women like Kelly, is legal. I know Bill O'Reilly's outraged because it's late-term abortion, and he thinks that should be illegal. But what he does, and it's not just George Tiller, there are about 4,000 a day in the United States, not necessarily of this kind, at various stages of development, and it's all perfectly legal. And it has been for the last 33, going on 34 years in the United States. It's Audio Open Lines. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is the last half hour of the program today. Our in-studio email address issue, ztc@kfuo.org, or 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Care to react to that? There's a lot to react to there. I mean, my mind is a whirl. You've got the issue of a 13-year-old girl being transported across state lines by her parents. Her parents decide that it's the best thing for her to do. She's 20 weeks along. Do the math. That's 5 months along. That's more than halfway to full term. There are babies that are born prematurely in hospitals where large amounts of money are spent to ensure their survival at 20 weeks or thereabouts. And thank God they are. And I know it's difficult to listen to, but I think we need to. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org, and our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Linda calls from her car. Linda, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thank you. George Tiller is nothing new to me. I've been involved in the pro-life movement for many years. And back in the late 80s, the early 90s, there was direct action movement, which is a nonviolent sit-in type of a process. We would go to abortion clinics. We would sit and watch the girls go through, not only in St. Louis, but I was actually at George Tiller's clinic where we did a sit-in, and very pregnant girls would go through and pass us up while we were being arrested and trying to lay down our lives to protect the innocent lives. And thousands of Christians were arrested in that whole process from the late 80s to the early 90s, and the church didn't do anything. The church didn't do anything. The people who were out there laying down, literally, to try to protect the women, to protect the babies, and I'm sorry if I'm upset, 19, this is in the 90s. It's been going on that long.
Yes, Linda, thank you very much. I don't know what the church did or didn't do. It wouldn't be a bad idea for, if you've got, even if you don't have extra money at the church, think about this. This would be a good thing to do. You can bail people out of jail. All it takes is money. And I want to thank the Christians who are willing to be arrested under those circumstances. Anita calls from her car. Hi, Anita.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes. In listening to this, I agree that it's a terrible, terrible, terrible thing. I just can't stress how terrible I think this is. But in the slant of the story, in making this Kelly a victim, of course I haven't heard the whole thing, I don't think she was totally victimized by her doctor. Where were the parents in all of this? I mean, I'm sure that the doctor didn't come to her home, which was in a different state, and say, hey, I can take care of this for you. Yes, it's available. But she was a 13, 14-year-old girl. Where was the guidance from her family and her parents? I think she was victimized by whoever raped her, by her parents who allowed this to happen, as well as by the doctor.
All right. Anita, thank you. I don't think she was raped. No, all that the story told us was that she was pregnant at 13, and then the abortion occurred when she was 20 weeks along. Well, look, she's complicitous in this, obviously. Her parents are complicitous, too. Apparently, they're the ones who helped her find Tiller and got her there. Tiller's obviously got blood on his hands. This is a good thing. A woman's right to choose leaves blood on the hands of the parents and the girl and the doctor, and it leaves the baby dead in a toilet. That's a beautiful face to put on. a woman's right to choose. Next time any of you who support abortion at any level, even, you know, I'm personally opposed, but you can't make it illegal, the next time you find yourself saying that convenient little phrase, a woman's right to choose, think of Kelly and her baby in the toilet. That's what I want you to think about. In fact, you won't be able to think of anything else, I guarantee you. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Ken's up next. He's calling from his car. Hi, Ken.
Yes, thanks. I agree with you. Next time, you whatever you do, you think about that. But the point is, Christians seem to have only one way to debate those kinds of issues, and that is through the voting machine. And I don't understand why Christians who know what a tragedy this is and how wrong it is would allow themselves to punch the ballot and elect people who are pro-abortion. It just floors me. Christians, many of them, tend to think, well, what's that for me? Am I a union member? Then I'll vote for a Democrat. I hate to be political here, but this is how we solve this problem.
Well, Ken, I understand what you're saying. Let me make two points. One, it's not only Christians. There are lots of people in this country who aren't Christian who are still fully aware of what abortion is and are against it. Second point, Kansas is the reddest state in the nation. It is one of the most Republican states in the nation. Remember that book, What's Wrong with Kansas? Why did the author choose Kansas? It's one of the most Republican states in the nation. And apparently, what George Tiller does there in Kansas is completely legal. It's okay with the red Kansas voters. I agree with you. How can you punch a ballot with other considerations in mind when you got Kelly's running around out there? Pauline calls from Columbia, Illinois. Hi, Pauline.
Hello, Pastor Todd. I just, talking about George Tiller, the killer from Kansas, I just, being in the pro-life movement, I unfortunately know him real well. My husband went on the internet. He actually has an internet site where you can go and actually ask him anything, and it goes through the whole killing process of the baby. And something that's really disturbing is he even has a section where the women that are going to abort can bring clothing for the deceased infant and take pictures of the baby in them to help them go through the grieving process. So just a thought. I mean, it's just very deep and very dark. So.
Pauline, thank you very much. I don't know, my mom used to call it turning a sow's ear into a silk purse or something like that. You can't clean it up. Yeah, there are pro-choice groups that talk about mourning and we need to mourn now and giving women, what are you mourning? Come on. If it's a woman's right to choose, then that's a good thing. And if the woman's right to choose overrides the child's right to live, what are you mourning? Did you hear what Kelly said there? She said in that interview, what she's gone through after the abortion, when she considers that the worst case scenario before she had the abortion was keeping her baby, upon reflection, she realizes that might have been kind of a good thing. By the way, I guess I should mention that George Tiller is, as far as we know, a member in good standing of a Lutheran congregation in Kansas of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, which has officially taken a pro-choice position. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's Audio Open Lines, Issues, Etc. this Wednesday, the 13th of December. You can email us here in the studio with your thoughts, your reactions, and your comments. issuesetc@kfuo.org. You can also call us here in the studio for about the next 10 minutes, not even that many minutes, actually. 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Let's see if we can get this in before we go to a break. You can call and react to the O'Reilly abortion story. Let's hear a little bit more from Bill O'Reilly. There's a report out on charitable giving, who gives, what they give, and how it breaks down demographically nationwide. It overturned many assumptions about who gives, what they give, and why. And here's Bill O'Reilly's take on that report on charitable giving.
Hi, I'm Bill O'Reilly. Thanks for watching us tonight. Generosity in America. That's the subject of this evening's Talking Points memo. A new book called Who Really Cares by Arthur Brooks says conservative Americans give 30% more money to charity than liberal Americans. Also, religious people give four times more money to charity than secular people. In the season of giving, that is an interesting information equation. But the key question is why? Why are traditional Americans more generous and secular progressive? It isn't economics. A map displayed in the book shows the wealthier states, like California and New York, are below average in charitable giving, while poorer states like Mississippi and New Mexico are above average. So what's really going on here? Talking Points believes it's all in the philosophy. Conservative and traditional Americans tend to be Christian, and the basic command of Jesus was, help the poor. Religious Jews and Muslims are also called upon to give alms. So religion drives charitable giving. Secular progressives are essentially non-religious and believe the government should be the driving force behind generosity. They want a huge apparatus in Washington to redistribute income. That is, take money from affluent Americans and give it to those less fortunate. SPs also believe the world revolves around individual gratification, and that often takes a lot of money. So there's less inclination to give their personal funds to the poor. Let the government provide largesse. The evidence gets even more interesting when you compare charitable giving in America to secular Western Europe. The average American family gives 14 times as much to charity as the Italian family does, 7 times as much as the German family. In Europe, governments provide vast entitlements so families don't have the health, education, and housing costs Americans do. Yet we still give much more. Now, I could be wrong about this. Secular progressives and liberals may give less to charity for reasons I don't know about. But the stats are the stats. Right now, conservative Americans are far more generous to the downtrodden than their liberal counterparts, and Americans in general are the most giving people on the planet.
All right, there's the particular take that Bill O'Reilly has on this report on charitable giving. You heard about it. I'm sure you did. They had a piece on, I don't know, 2020. John Stossel gave his particular spin on it, and Bill O'Reilly's, we've just played that for you. What are your thoughts? It's the time for giving. It's the season. What did they say yesterday? The season for giving? I can't forget the billboard that I drive by both ways, to and from work every day. It's a Budweiser billboard that just says, "Tis beer." I think it's supposed to be a takeoff on "Tis the Season," but it just says "Tis Beer," which Budweiser is. I guess that's truth in advertising. Tis beer. Well, tis the season for giving, for generosity. People open their hearts. They open their wallets. You walked into Walmart or into the grocery store, and you got the guy ringing the bell and singing the songs, and he's got his little bucket out there for you to put your dollar in. And we do it this time of the year, apparently. What people believe not only determines, to a certain extent, their politics, but it also determines how generous they're willing to be. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, and our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Here's one more, just pulling one from the potpourri pile. You might have seen this. My wife saw it last night. We were watching television late, and there was a promo for a new Sundance Channel show called One Punk Under God. The kid looked somewhat familiar, like a younger version of the preacher Jim Baker. Well, there's a reason. Yes, it's his son. Here's the
Jesus
story.
Was reaching out to those who people didn't like.
Inclusion is the message here, a shabby chic Brooklyn bar where people gather to hear a punk rock preacher, Jay Baker.
If these were your parents, what would you do? Love and stand by them? Follow in their footsteps? Or question all you've been taught, briefly self-destruct, and turn religion on its head?
The answer? All of the above.
Baker's parents are fallen televangelists Jim and Tammy Faye. He's using their sins and becoming the It Preacher, the subject of a reality series on the Sundance Channel. His face plastered on buses along with his not-so-hip message, it's cool to be Christian.
To some, Christian is a dirty word. Christian is something that you run from.
You know, the word Christian, automatically they think, you know, oh, you're Jerry Falwell, you know.
Or Jim Baker.
Or Jim Baker, yeah, you know.
Insert whatever irony you want here. His father, Jim Baker, led the Praise the Lord ministry. He was the It Preacher of the Christian right in the 80s, raking it at his peak $172 million in revenue. Until Baker went morally bust after a sexual tryst with Church Secretary Jessica Hahn. He wound up in jail for stealing from his followers. But that was back in 89, and the sins of the father have been forgiven.
I get along with my dad pretty well. I mean, we have our struggles. and we're constantly trying to, you know, work things out as father and son.
Great to have you all here today. My son is in the house.
He's trying to hide the fact that he's my son, you know, and so he has tattoos.
No, I don't change the Baker. No. Look, I got a PTL tattoo.
Oh, dear God.
Jim Baker now has a new TV ministry himself, but don't confuse it with his son's. Jay's Revolution Church strives to be boldly different. Its motto? We're sorry for being self-righteous, judgmental bastards, and for injecting ourselves in places we don't belong.
You know, conservative right has hijacked politics, but I think they've worked off of each other. I think they've used each other. And to me, it's caused the church to be in quite a sad state right now.
Sad because the religious right, Jay says, is so unforgiving in its moral judgments. That's why gays, pro-abortionists, everyone is welcome in his Revolution Church. As for whether Jay Baker's new kind of church will ever be as big as his father's ministry once was, forget it. As Baker puts it, we are not about celebrity and all about message. Carol Costello, CNN New York.
Now, I've watched several news reports, listened to several news reports on Jay Baker, Jimmy Baker's son, who is going to be the subject of this reality program on Sundance Channel, One Punk Under God. And he talks a lot. This is typical of kind of the avant-garde church, whether it's avant-garde, a guy with a bunch of piercings and tattoos and crazy hair and dark-rimmed glasses, which look strangely like the glasses that I used to wear. Was I a punk? Were those punk glasses? I thought that they were decent, upstanding citizen glasses I used to wear. Well, whether it's that kind of avant-garde Christian or the kind of avant-garde Christian that you might find at any big mega church where they don't meet in a pub or something, but they meet in their big auditorium where they really consider themselves on the edge. They're out there on the leading wave of what's happening next. They talk a lot about the message. But you never, well, not never, but very seldom get around to finding out what that message is. Got to get the message out. Got to get the message out. What's the message? There's a whole interview with him. He says it's all about the message. And we didn't hear what the message was, except apparently being Christian is cool, which sounds strangely like the message of the big mega churches who were apparently on the cutting edge. It's just a different standard of cool. If you think cool is piercings and body art, then you got Jay Baker's church, where they'll talk about the message, but apparently not deliver it very well. He's got the opportunity, you know. Or if you think cool is golf sweaters and nice tweed slacks and a beautiful wife and a suburban home, the megachurch has got that for you. It's just, I guess if you set the standard of the church at being cool rather than being faithful to the message of Jesus Christ crucified and risen for sinners, that's what you'll end up with. Tattoos or golf sweaters. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. Today's Issues Etc. broadcast was underwritten in part by Concordia Publishing House, publishers of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for December, titled From Heaven Above. For more information, look for the book cover on our homepage at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. Our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for December, From Heaven Above.